The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
In order to support our show, we need the help of some great advertisers. And we want to make sure those advertisers are ones that you'll actually want to hear about. But we need to learn a little bit more about you to make that possible. So go to podsurvey.com/goodfootball and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you better. That way, we can bring on advertisers you won't want to skip. Once you've completed the quick survey, you can enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's podsurvey.com/goodfootball, GOODFOOTBALL. Thanks for your help.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. It's Tuesday, April 2nd. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined by Mr. Denny Carter. We chose 4-2 over 4-1 to avoid any tomfoolery, Denny.
Oh, yeah.
My 7-year-old daughter kept trying to trick me all day and kept succeeding easily.
people wouldn't have believed anything we said yesterday.
No, it's true.
As opposed to today, where everything we say will be absolutely correct.
And, so they wouldn't have believed, like you said, that we have new Raiders coach Antonio Pierce planning for a mobile quarterback. And like you said, before we got on air, he passed on Justin Fields, who was literally given away like as a Salvation Army donation by the Chicago Bears.
We can't emphasize enough that Justin Fields went for possibly a sixth rounder in 2025. So free. And yeah, right. So yesterday, if you would have listened on April Fool's Day, you would have said, oh, Denny and Pat, they're joking around again. They're messing around with my Raiders. It's not fair, but no, it's not an April Fool's joke. Antonio Pierce said when a reporter asked, "Hey, what are you looking for in a quarterback?" and he said, "I want a damn runner." That's what he said.
Wow, we know a guy.
Yeah, by the way, start of the kids, but that's what he said. I'm just reporting what was said, and yeah, so there was a guy, there was a darn runner available, for free. And the Raiders seem not to be interested. So we're not sure exactly how much Antonio Pierce means what he said about that quarterback situation. Yeah,
he would have been truly perfect there because he is a darn runner. And he also proved something a lot of the darn runner kind of dual threat quarterbacks don't, which is that he can relentlessly target the best guy. Like Justin Fields, Say what you will about his passing ability. DJ Moore was down there somewhere for him all last season. He made sure to always be getting the ball in his best player's hands. He would have done that with Devontae. Unlike Josh McDaniels, he would have been interested in getting the ball to Devontae Adams.
I would have liked to see, from a real football standpoint and from a fantasy standpoint, I would have liked to see Justin Fields in Vegas. Unfortunately, now we have another season probably of Aiden O'Connell.
Justin Fields, clearly overrated by fantasy players. Also, clearly, everyone is so in their heads about Justin Fields.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, NFL. I know he's inaccurate. He's worth more than a sixth round pick. You kind of got in your head on this one. And like with some of the absolutely horrible quarterback signings and decisions that have been made, maybe trade a fourth round pick. Fourth round pick, he's not even going to be on the team in 2 years, or he's going to be a core special teamer. Oh, great, cool. You might as well have just seen if Justin Fields could actually be good.
Right. He's not Terrell Pryor, you know, like that's what teams are treating him as. It is baffling. And again, good on the Steelers for getting a guy who, you know, could be a very serviceable guy, if not possibly a franchise guy, for free. Antonio Pierce, you should have watched some Justin Fields film from the previous couple 3 years and said, oh, hey, there's a darn runner. We should get him.
We can't emphasize enough the good on the Steelers part, where, as you and I keep talking about, Mike Tomlin for not even an entire fortnight claimed there would be no competition. And then admitted there would be a I think I told you maybe off air, maybe on air. He got added to one Russell Wilson group text.
Yeah.
And then Mike Tomlin immediately fired off his own group text to the GM and owner. Yeah, there's a competition.
Yeah, we're launching the competition.
I cannot stand this guy.
Right. He just sent me 11 videos of him working out this morning at 3 a.m. He sent it at 3 a.m.
So. He appears to have an emoji expansion pack. A lot of these emojis aren't even like normal Apple emojis, and he's somehow sending them. And I'm so irritated, I could die.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a competition. So Justin Fields, we'll talk about him all summer long. Today, I haven't even told people what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the Rashee Rice fallout. John Harbaugh talking about the big dog going woof, woof, and running. And Denny wanting to talk a lot about RPOs. Talking about Raheem Mostert re-upping in Miami. Or not re-upping, he was still on the team. An extension. And just getting into the Dolphins' backfield outlook as they run it back with Devin Achane and Raheem Mostert. Christian Watson going to, quote, a special lab to address his hamstring issues. That's always a really great sign. Yeah. Denny wants to talk about Michael Penix again.
You know why? Because it's a day that ends in Y. I think it's time to talk about Michael Penix. The media won't talk about him. I'll talk about him.
I want to talk about Ezekiel Elliott again because the reports are finally coming out that, yeah, the Cowboys are going to re-sign him. It's not official or anything like that. Then Denny and I, at the end of the show, are going to get into some players who might be impacted by the draft. Players who are kind of sitting pretty in fantasy right now who could have their stock really, really hurt by what happens on draft week. And that includes players like Zach Moss on the Bengals. I'll be a Rashee Rice, Denny. I mean, yikes. Could you have not instigated a 6-car pileup on a Dallas highway when you were racing and extremely lucky no one died? I don't even know if anyone was even hurt.
Yeah.
He was in trouble. And it's a situation where it's a skill group that didn't need anyone in trouble. We'll say that. And it's, what are your Rashee Rice thoughts? What do you think the potential fallout could be? Could he be suspended by the NFL?
I mean, you know, I guess the original reports were that he left the scene of the accident, which is a no-no legally. That's how we say it in the law.
Legally, morally, even like practically in this day and age, because everyone will film you. There's cameras everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. It pretty much in all ways, it is not the right thing to do. And I think the way that he's handled this, I mean, it's gotten better. The handling has gotten better over the past 48 hours. I will say that. But I wouldn't be surprised if the league hands down some sort of suspension for Rashee Rice eventually. Even if he gets off, you know, legally here, I could see the league saying, no, this will not do, and him having a short suspension for this coming year.
Yeah, it's the classic thing where he will probably plea bargain in the real legal system, but in like the NFL legal system, it probably will result in a suspension. It won't be terribly long. I also don't really know if it'll be this year. The NFL, I was about to like knock the NFL for waiting for the legal process to play out, but with stuff like this, the NFL probably should wait for the legal process to play out. And, well, man, I don't know, this is pretty serious, actually. But I don't think the suspension will be this year. He could get it taken care of this summer, though. If he's starting to act contrite. He almost basically admitted to it, I thought, in his statement.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the statement was not something you typically see after an incident like this where they say, you know, the lawyer says my client will be, you know, proven innocent of all charges. This is a witch hunt, whatever. Like this, it was nothing like that. It was like, this happened. We're going to take responsibility for it. And that's why I said I think that he's now handling it much better than the original response, which was to walk away. Again, not the best choice.
Literally walk away, especially on a highway. Do not be walking away on a highway.
I don't. It's just baffling. Yeah, I mean, you know, from a thankfully no one was hurt. I will say from like an on-field standpoint, like you said, Pat, the Chiefs can't really afford to lose their number two pass catcher behind Travis Kelce. Last year, over the course of the season, he had a 17% target share, which, of course, was much higher in the final 6 or 8 weeks. It was something around 25% through the final half of the season, 23%. Anyway, and it was all, you know, near the line of scrimmage, intermediate targets, and it works. And he works in that KC system because the KC system is a bunch of checkdowns. And he's a guy who can take a check down and make something out of it because he ranked among the league leaders in yards after the catch per reception.
Just a reminder that it was a bunch of check downs last year. And this is not the new everlasting truth in the Kansas City offense. I'm trying to get this out of you.
Whatever you say, man. Look, they won a Super Bowl doing it. They're going to continue to hand off to receivers 1 yard past line of scrimmage.
The Chiefs do not want to score the 15th most points in the league again. I'll say that very confidently. They were 15th in points last year. They're under 400, I believe, for the first time in the Mahomes era, where they had never even been close to being under 400. They're going to work to...
Yeah, when your EPA per play is below the Jaguars, something is very wrong.
Wow, man, it's so. But then again, you can just go Golden State Warriors mode in the playoffs. Like it is.
Well, and that, but you called it. Like no one else. Like literally, no one believed in them except for you.
I know. It is funny. I know.
Even their fans were like, "This year is a learning experience." You know, I think that we learned the hard way that you need a second pass catcher. You need this and that. And they, okay, well, this is over after the Christmas Day massacre at the hands of the Raiders. And you were like, "No, obviously they're going to."
During
the Raiders game, you said they're winning the Super Bowl.
That's actually not a bit.
They didn't look like a top 20 team on Christmas.
No, they didn't care. They're already to the point like Christmas Day. They're like, oh my god.
Oh, they didn't care. No. Mahomes was having a meltdown.
That's true. Well, he cares, and that was the why. Though you just had to keep betting on the Chiefs. Like I don't know, maybe the team with an elite defense and the best player on planet Earth might still go to the Super Bowl.
It seems to be a good formula.
That was just what I followed the numbers there. And they took me to Chiefs' obvious Super Bowl. And so we'll see what happens this year. They don't want to score 371 points. I'll say that.
You would think so. Obviously, Marquise Brown would be a beneficiary here if Rice misses some time. But like you said, I mean, this kind of process moves very slowly. Could be next year. Could be 2025.
The Chiefs don't want to score that few points. We don't want to be away from our listeners, but we'll be right back after this. Get your weekday started with Bet the Edge. Join Jay Croucher and Drew Dinsick as they break down the NFL Draft, NBA, Major League Baseball, and much more. New episodes drop every weekday at 6 a.m. Eastern on the NBC Sports YouTube channel, and you can find it in podcast form wherever you download and subscribe. So whether you're looking to get involved on who will be drafted in the top 10 later this month or interested in player props and futures, check out Jay and Drew for more insight. And don't forget, find all your favorite NBC Sports shows and Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Speaking of Drew Dinsick, we still have never debriefed our week-long argument about who would win the Super Bowl. Of course, being the Chiefs. Drew, of course, being the 49ers.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you seemed that you knew ball more than
I do. Drew really knows ball. I was so lucky to win that one. I was very, very...
Drew, listen, I'm sorry. I should have sided with you. Drew's arguments were just ironclad.
Drew's argument's really good. I feel like you took them so to heart. You were acting like the game wouldn't even be competitive.
I said it was not going to be close. Yeah. The other way.
Like even Drew was like, oh, I don't know about that. I think it'll probably be pretty competitive. And Denny just was predicting 49ers blowout. You would have been so right all year. You ended it on a low ebb. You needed to be wrong. Denny needed to be wrong once.
At least no one will remember. And I can totally deny this come next season.
Denny was wrong once, and it's just all over. The whole thing just reset again. Yeah, Denny's never been right about it.
Right. This guy wasn't talking about Puka Nacua in March.
So, by the way, we mentioned Antonio Pierce in our lead-in. Check out where I have Antonio Pierce ranked. My coach's article, my annual coach rankings, was dropped Tuesday morning. Of course, the fine print will tell you Antonio Pierce is not actually ranked because I consider him a new hire. I ranked the 24 rollover coaches, and then I do the 8 new hires as their own entity, even if they have previous NFL experience like Jim Harbaugh. I worked very hard on it. I'm very glad it's out there, though. Check it out. We're going to talk about it on the podcast on Thursday. On the podcast on Tuesday, I think you made the joke for the show, a day that ends in Y, that means we're going to talk about Mr. Derrick Henry and the Baltimore Ravens. John Harbaugh was saying a lot this week about the offense, including there is no doubt, quote unquote, that the offense will look different in 2024. And then also saying they weren't going to be overly reliant on RPOs this year. I don't even remember how reliant they were on RPOs last year, Denny. But I think we've been delving into the data. We've been talking about Derrick Henry a lot. As a lot of it boils down to, as you were joking to me, big dog gonna run. big dog gets ball.
Big dog run. That's what it comes down to.
And that's what it comes down to. But you say it's more nuanced than that, though.
I'm gonna try to make it more nuanced than that, but it might not be more nuanced than big dog run. Here's what John Harbaugh said. He said, quote, "I think we're in the right place with our RPOs. I don't think it's something that we're going to go wholesale towards, because Lamar has got so many different ways he plays the game, and there are other things we like to do, to be honest with you. I don't see us he's not being dishonest with you. He's being honest. I don't see us going toward a specific offense that runs those," talking about RPOs, "more than anybody else. It'll be part of our offense," blah blah blah. 15 other quotes. He talked a lot about RPOs, folks, is what I'm saying. So looked into the numbers, and here's what I found. The Ravens in 2023 ran the third most run pass option plays behind the Eagles and the Chargers, surprisingly. And they were quite successful, and I should say, Pat, quite pass heavy on RPO plays. Lamar Jackson passed on 66% of run pass option plays last year. The Eagles were at 54%. The Chargers were at 60%. So they do like to pass from that formation. I don't know if this whole talk about our offense is going to change a little bit. Maybe that means, I think it's reasonable to say, we got Derrick Henry, so we're not going to pass on 2/3 of our RPOs. We're going to pass on half or something like that.
And everyone expecting big changes in the Ravens offense. Would you agree with the statement that maybe even without Greg Roman last year, the Ravens offense didn't change as much as expected?
They did pass a lot more, especially on early downs, which was important.
I guess the early down pass rate really did spike, didn't it?
Yeah.
I just didn't think it was a fundamentally different approach, but it was a much better sequenced approach.
It was. Which
is fundamental. People with Todd Monken are like, oh, they're going to pass. It was literally endlessly. It wasn't that, right. But it was better sequence.
No, they weren't like Dallas or anything as far as pass rate over expected. They weren't the Bengals. But, relatively speaking, I mean, pass rate over expected, they had been in the bottom three or bottom five for most of Lamar's career, even his MVP season, or especially his MVP season. They were massively, massively, massively run heavy. So I think you're starting from a baseline way down here. You're getting up to the middle of the league. So it did change in that way. And while we're on the subject of big dog run in the Baltimore offense, here's the kind of opportunity Derrick Henry could have, touchdown-based opportunity. And, of course, that's where his upside will lie, since he'll probably not be catching many passes here. So if you combine Gus Edwards and Justice Hill's inside the 10 rushes last year, you get 42, okay? That accounted for 68%. Of the team's rushing attempts inside the 10-yard line. If you give Derrick Henry 42 attempts inside the 10, and he is going to go ballistic, okay? So Gus Edwards had 12 rushing touchdowns inside the 10. Oh, no, 13 touchdowns inside the 10. Justice Hill had another two. This team will wreck opponents inside the 10 with Derrick Henry in that backfield. And yeah, I mean, there will be days, I think, where Derrick Henry does not rack up a ton of yards, but the touchdowns are going to be there. There's just no two ways about it.
That combined total of 42 carries inside the 10-yard line would have led the league last year. Right. Joe Mixon led the league with 38. 39.5 feels like a reasonable over-under for Derrick Henry. Because they'll seed some of those, not just to Lamar, but whoever the backup ends up being. He came there to get the ball inside the 10, amongst many other things.
That's right.
He's tired of seeing people who aren't Derrick Henry have the ultimate Derrick Henry role.
I know.
He needed the Derrick Henry. Why does Jamal Williams have the Derrick Henry role?
David Montgomery.
Exactly. What are these guys? No offense to these guys. They're my friends. I'm on text change with them. This should be me, though.
Right. You had a beer with David Montgomery. You told him. You said, I'm tired of seeing you score touchdowns, Demont.
Yes, so... the RPOs with Derrick Henry, by the way, this all comes back to what I keep talking about for both Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. Imagine a world for Derrick Henry where the defense is actually scared of the quarterback And imagine a world for Lamar Jackson where the defense is actually scared of the running back.
Right. And this is a team, by the way, with Gus Edwards and Justice Hill over the past 2 years, and I guess J.K. Dobbins sprinkled in there. The Ravens have led the NFL in rush yards on RPO plays over the past two seasons.
Gosh.
And it hasn't been particularly close. So very efficient from the RPO, from that RPO standpoint. I will say that I was looking more into it, Pat. And RPOs average 6.1 yard. I'm sorry, 6.5 yards per play. RPOs, wow. 6.5. That's basically the Niners last year, 6.5 yards per play. Non-RPO plays, 5 yards per play. So when you get a good quarterback and a good running back in that situation, I think you can, quote, make some hay.
Is the, you can. As say. And even if he's declining a little bit, Derrick Henry, he still remained in the positive and rush yards over expected and just a Titans offense where everything went wrong last year. I just think so much of it is going to be offset by stuff like this. And yeah, you can say this about any single NFL player, but if Derrick Henry stays healthy, I feel like the baseline is probably 12 to 13 touchdowns, and 20 plus is in the range about.
I think you're right. I would not, if someone said Derrick Henry scoring 20 touchdowns this year, I'd say, yeah, I mean, that sounds kind of right.
I think a disappointing season would be like 13 touchdowns.
Oh, it would be like a huge letdown, honestly.
So, and again, that's if he stays healthy, but 20 plus is as well within the range of outcomes. By the way, there's been an outpouring of support on social media for myself after you guys prevented me from drafting Derrick Henry in the best ball draft last Thursday with Pat.
Hey, listen, so you're going to tell me, Pat, that you're going to draft the best ball team with 3-0 RB bros. And you're going to say, I'm going to take Derrick Henry. Oh, no, we are going to revolt. No.
Oh, I converted Corain though. Corain agrees with me on Derrick Henry. Even Crane's, all right, hold on. I like this in theory. Like in a draft, of course we can't actually do this.
He likes to talk about it like a professor, but not.
We have to draft our fifth straight wide receiver right now, who's not even the number two on his own team.
Right.
We have to do that.
I think we took an undrafted free agent over Derrick Henry.
But yeah, I thought I converted Pat. By the way, check out that show if you have not. Pat already so deep in thought on the 2024 season. Extremely good stuff. Like everything is from Mr. Crane. So that's a lot. We'll talk Derrick Henry, just like Justin Fields. Denny and I sit down, we plan a show. Like I this is me to Denny. I got the Fields thing in there already. I got the Henry thing in there already. Like, okay, good. I was gonna make sure. And so then that's every show. That's how we plan though.
Yeah, right.
Fields. Right. Derrick Henry.
We will never not talk about those two.
We will never not. We're gonna move on to two. We haven't talked about a ton so far this offseason though. Mr. Raheem Mostert, Mr. Devin Achane. First, do you have any fear the Dolphins are going to add to their backfield? They're just a team that is so obsessed with the run. It's kind of like the Kyle Shanahan thing where he has Christian McCaffrey now, so he's finally stopped adding to the backfield. But every year it'd be like, oh, the 49ers, they got a full backfield. They really can't like use another draft. And they just took a third-round running back. And do you have any fear the Dolphins might – Raheem Mostert's over 30, very long injury history. Devin Achane, of course, undersized, already has an injury history. Any concern there? And if not, do you expect things to be status quo between Raheem Mostert and Devin Achane? Do you expect Devin Achane for them to get another opportunity as like a higher touch back?
Yeah.
What do you – just the lay of the land for you in early April in the Dolphins' backfield.
So when both guys were healthy and in the lineup, they split it pretty evenly. They split the backfield pretty evenly. Of course, Mostert saw most of the red zone work and critically near the goal line, you know, so that's a huge edge.
Sorry to interrupt, but another guy who had the Derrick Henry role who wasn't Derrick Henry.
Right. And, you know, I honestly, you know, look, I want to like the Dolphins. I love McDaniel. They seem like a forward looking, fun team that has embraced the modern game. Right.
But
They sign a 45-year-old running back to a multi-year extension. What's going on?
I'm telling you, the Shanahan people cannot. Doesn't matter how EPA focused they are, how forward thinking they are, they cannot stop investing in the running back position. Even if it's in house, out of house, they cannot stop investing.
Like in you're telling, okay, yeah, and you've said this before. You've said that the Shanahan people have basically determined that there are only 11 living humans who can run their offense, who can be the running back in their offense. Raheem Mostert is one of the 11 living humans. And so they're going to keep him around forever, even though you know, he's probably going to start declining. He's very old. Like, they have an explosive guy behind him. And I know you're not going to give Devon Achan 30 carries a game. I get that. But good Lord, there has to be somebody else you can get in the backfield who you could be like, here's how our system works. You can learn it by tomorrow for practice.
They're so precious about it. And you remember one of the things I, 2 years ago, so then we kept arguing about on the podcast for some reason, was I was so indignant. The 49ers acquired Christian McCaffrey, like, well, he needs a week to get up to, I'm like, what? Yeah. NFL running back needs a week to learn how to carry the ball. And the Kyle Shanahan, like, maybe we're overthinking this. Just give him the ball. Like, you ever thought about it? And then I think they gave him like 11 carries.
Well, yeah. And you were also indignant about Jeff Wilson signing with the Dolphins for like some sort of huge deal, relatively, you know, speaking. And Jeff Wilson, one of the 11 guys, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, so they got to get away from that. But anyway, I do think that we're going to see something similar with Achan and Mostert this year. I feel like Achan is going to be kind of frustrating, honestly.
Well, sometimes it's simple. Sometimes the dog is big and takes the ball a million times. Sometimes the running back is just a little too small. Yeah. And Devon Achan is just the classic, not the same position. He's just kind of like a Tavon Austin. Well, not to compare him to Tavon Austin. He already did more in a season than Tavon Austin ever did. But a guy who plays better on paper than in theory. Devon Achan has already reached like a really important milestone where it does actually translate when he's healthy. It's just, how is this guy going to stay healthy at that size? With the kind of, and they weren't just giving him like change of pace. It was kind of beyond. It was like 16 to 18. And change of pace, you're usually in the 10 to 14 range. Right. He was getting more like the 16 to 18 range. It just seems like, I don't know how he's going to hold up under those workloads. But so, yeah, comparing him to Tavon Austin was offensive. But
yeah.
Same idea where it seems so good on paper and has been good in practice for Achan. It's just, how does this guy stay healthy?
Our buddy Mike Clay at ESPN actually wrote up a little piece on the Dolphins backfield in his article on early projections for the 2024 season. I wanted to read the folks a little bit from that. So there were 8 games last season where Mostert and Achan played significant snaps together. During those outings, Mike Clay said, Achan held a tiny edge in snaps and was ahead in pass routes and targets. Mostert led in carries. Mostert ended up with more touches, 114 to 106, and touchdowns, 11 to 9. But Achan had a massive edge in yardage, 815 to 539. So you know what you're getting. Like, I think with Mostert, you know, he's going to be a floor play every week. With Achan, he's going to be a more volatile player who, you know, might bust one for 80 yards and you win your week. He also might give you 6 fantasy points, you know.
When you were talking, my thought on Raheem Mostert and Devon Achan is this: I'm going to be out on both. I'm not running it back with Raheem Mostert finally staying healthy. Over 30, he stays healthy. Like, that doesn't seem like a situation where you hit on 17. And Devon Achan, because of the explosive plays, I love. I'm usually a moth to the flame for the explosive play guys, but his ADP is just going to be like sickeningly high.
It is going. It's going to be crazy.
It's going to be I'm sure there's no way we can look up what it is, but
no, we don't know. We're going to have producer Adam look it up.
No idea what it is now.
Can't do it.
It's going to be very, very high in like managed redraft home leagues. And I just feel like if you miss out on that, you could miss out on a league winner. I have to admit that, but I'm going to let someone else take that injury risk. Every player in the NFL is injury prone, blah, 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 blah. It's the NFL. But you talk about how you like Mike McDaniel, but type stuff. And my coaching write-up, which is very positive of Mike McDaniel, I do say, I'm wondering if he's already reached what I term his Garoppolo maximum. Should I then put a trademark symbol after?
That's good.
And just because it's 2 years in a row, the offense has just been figured out down the stretch. I don't really know how else to put it. 2 years ago, it was kind of because Tua was in and out of the lineup. But, man, it just certainly seemed like this was maxed out with Tua. And it's a system that has so much higher to climb with the right quarterback. But I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, Tua is Garoppolo. Let's just be honest about it. Can we say that?
Except he's even less creative than Garoppolo on the move. It's nuts. It's because Tua, we've had this discussion before. Tua is so focused on not getting hurt again, as he should be.
Yeah.
Even more than Jimmy. Like, if he gets outside the pocket, unless there's someone wide open, he's just not going to do it. He's going to go down because he can't get hurt again. But it was kind of pain. Like when he got flushed from the pocket last year, the play was just like over. It was just over. It was very disconcerting.
It was. Yeah. I mean, you knew that once the protection broke down, it was pretty much over. But I do think that the Shanahan guys can't get out of their own ways as far as finding a quarterback who can just be a stand-in for the coach in the pocket. And if you can do that, then you have a career in this Shanahan system. You're not going to win anything, but you're going to play a lot. You're going to have great EPA numbers, great stats. You're going to make a lot of money. And Tua's going to do just that.
Yeah, they want someone to be the avatar of the coach. And Kyle Shanahan, to make a point I always make, briefly realized he wanted more than that when he desperately traded up for Trey Lance. And then he just as desperately and quickly realized he did not want that.
You don't want it. You do not want a guy who can do more than the coach could do in the pocket.
Yeah, that's Mike McDaniel, I think, might think bigger. His situation's a little trickier than what Kyle's in. Where he took a first round pick, he took a lottery pick and made him good. That always equals big payday. That always equals running it back, but just kind of feel like they're trapped. And yeah, that the Garoppolo maximum has been reached.
We have, thank you to producer Adam for looking this up. We have an update on the Dolphins best ball ADP. We have, oh my goodness, Devon Achane going at 20 point pick 20.5. So in the second round, we have Mostert going at 93rd overall. I mean,
yeah, I think I actually might be drafting Mostert. He's barely in the top 100.
I've never been more out on a player than I am on Devon Achane at 20. At 20, I was going to be out at 35.
A change of pace running back, not change of pace, a 1B, sometimes 1A running back at 20.5.
Wow. The people, they love. They're going to love the 4 weeks where he scores 30 points.
Stop. And by the way, now we just ensured there's going to be a Pat and Denny have fun staying poor montage at the end of the season now when Devon Achane has won every league in existence.
Oh, that's funny.
We will. So fine. The bank examiner, I used to have a guest bedroom in my house. Now the bank examiner lives there.
Right. The bank has actually covered half my backyard with tarp.
Say the bank examiner is trying to get squatters rights in my house. I don't even know how any of this works, but it seems very illegal.
Read the fine print on your mortgage maybe next time.
That seems very, very illegal. It would be illegal not to move on. And you know what's illegal, Denny, is Christian Watson not injuring his hamstring.
Come on.
The guy, he's the new Keenan Allen's hamstrings, like make this guy's hamstrings or Christian Watson's hamstrings make Keenan Allen's hamstrings look like healthy hamstrings. Just cannot stop injuring his hamstrings. An obvious problem to any fantasy player and apparently to any Packers staff member. They've sent him, this is not a joke, to a special lab to address his hamstring injuries. And I'm just wondering, are we out on this guy permanently in fantasy at this point?
No, I'm encouraged by this. I'm encouraged. Look, apparently, per Christian Watson's father, who is very online, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing, actually.
I found his account, man. My guy is a poster. By the way, he looks younger than me somehow, which is interesting. Now that I'm older than players' fathers.
Yes.
This is great. Love that. So he said that basically that Christian Watson, since the season ended, so we're two and a half months past that point, has been looking into his hamstring injuries and how they keep happening. And he's gone to this special lab, which is a funny phrase. And it was used by Matt LaFleur, I think, in kind of a flippant way. He sounded not too into it, but which, I mean, you know, like.
He went to some little hamlet in Germany.
Yeah,
they got some pretty like shady doctors.
But Christian Watson has what we can term at you and me being doctors, chronic hamstring issues. Every time he's healthy, he completely blows a hamstring. I mean, and we're not talking about tweaks; we're talking about explosions.
Four to 6 weeks every time,
and you know it. Like in that Chiefs game where he was having a good game, catches one near the sideline. obvious hamstring explosion, and you're like, well, he's done. He's done for the rest of the year. Like, and he was. He was, you know, until week 18. So, I think that him dedicating himself to finding a solution here is very much a positive. And really, when he was healthy last year, which was not very much, when he was healthy, he was productive. So let's get back to that.
He's always been productive. He's kind of been like the straw that stirs the drink in the Packers offense, to the point where we got hurt again last year. We're like, man, does this kind of mean it's over for Jordan Love? Because things really took off when Christian Watson returned last year. Thankfully, they did figure out finally how to keep it going without Christian Watson. And it's easy to joke about and laugh about, like you said, but also, like you said, he had one option, basically: figure this out or not figure it out. And maybe he can't figure it out. Maybe he's not meant to be that big, that fast. You know, he's a size speed freak. He's putting so much torque on his muscles, in the same way like Kadarius Toney does, but the way any NFL player does. Maybe it's not a solvable problem, but this was basically his only option to try to figure out how to stop this.
If we could get a healthy Christian Watson in there, it's huge for Jordan Love. I mean, I think a healthy Christian Watson plus the rest of that really good receiving core. I mean, you're talking about Jordan Love with, I think, elite upside statistically. Yes.
Christian Watson is a game breaker. He's a touchdown scorer too. Despite that, you know, he's never really been a red zone guy yet, but he's like a touchdown scorer.
But he's so freakishly fast. He's faster than everybody on the field. Like when he's healthy, that's just a fact. And the Packers know that. I'm sure the Packers are, you know, advocating for this special lab to do its thing.
We love our. He's a Groom Lake. Look up Groom Lake if you don't know what it is.
Never. I'm sorry.
It's associated with Area 51.
I see.
It's an Area 51 joke that I have made before on this show. I hate to say. But they're sending him to Groom Lake in a special lab funded by dark Defense Department money.
Well, there's actually an X-Files special episode coming out on Watson's hamstring.
They got David Duchovny to agree to a one-episode contract. Michael Penix, you want to talk about Michael Penix every single show? What's the latest of Michael Penix? Which we're getting a lot of good reports, but as I have pointed out to you for the show, they are all coming from one source.
They are.
See, the Penix people are really, really, really working hard on a certain media member. That doesn't mean it's wrong, though. What have we heard of Michael Penix? And what's the latest? And on a very polarizing draft prospect, someone who could sneak into the first round.
So I'm really sorry for my dog going crazy somewhere in the house. So Penix, there's a lot going on with Penix. An NFL coach recently told Bleacher Report's Jordan Schultz that Michael Penix is a, quote, freak show and, quote, locked in first rounder after a strong pro day in which he ran a 4.5 40. And I know folks were shocked by this because Michael Penix basically had zero rushing yards in college. Like, he never, ever ran the ball. So how can he be fast? But I think that the Washington offense itself, led to him being a pocket passer, a distributor, a point guard, rather than a guy who's running. Go ahead.
No, sorry. I actually didn't want to interrupt you there. But I would also, one reason he didn't run is because he tore his ACL twice. And, cool, like, he's fast running straight. Quarterbacks don't get to run straight very often, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and then apparently Penix also had dinner with the Giants after his pro day and later had a private workout with the Vikings. He's also been linked to top 30 visits with the Falcons, Commanders, Raiders, and Broncos. And Commanders, if I think I may have missed them. We talked last week or maybe 2 weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago on the show. And, you know, our colleague Zach Kruger has done a lot of really good work on pressure to sack rate, which is the stat du jour this season. And I'm not saying that dismissively. It really is, I think.
And Zach's putting out an article on it on Wednesday.
He is. And I can't wait to read it. He actually gave me a little preview, folks. So check that out when it goes live on Roto World. And again, I'm not being dismissive. I'm all in on pressure to sack rate because I think it is indicative of how a player operates, in the pocket as a pocket passer, which is really in the end, all teams are looking for. Okay. And a guy who will not give up massive negative plays. And that is Michael Penix to a T. Now I know he's old. He's old, old, old.
Okay? He's so old.
I know.
And like Joe Burrow was old. He at least had the decency to have the greatest season in NCAA history before he came in.
I know. I know. And I know that there's some questions about Michael Penix's mid-range intermediate accuracy. He's not a perfect prospect, but I think
I love to be the oldest player in the draft and have two torn ACLs.
Right. And there's that. I think bang for your buck wise, I think that Michael Penix stands out among these guys. I think that there is, I'm trying to word this carefully, there are indications for each of the top three quarterbacks that they could be poor picks. And a guy like Penix seems to me to be safer in many ways. And some teams, Pat, you know this, they're looking for the safe option. They're looking for someone who will keep everybody employed for the next 3 to 5 years.
And as you've already pointed out, it's J.J. McCarthy.
It could be him, yeah.
He's going number two. But I think Caleb Williams is about – I still kind of include Caleb Williams, the T-Law, Andrew Luck tier, just to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, I do. The guy, he's got like that crazy energy that all the best coaches and quarterbacks do, like – his like manifests a little differently, I feel like, but like this guy, he's on a different wavelength than everyone else. And it just somehow always involves dominance. Like the guy, the screwballs, like Jim Harbaugh, Patrick Mahomes, you know, has been revealed to be more and more of a screwball. He's like, wow, I had no idea Patrick Mahomes was like the most competitive person on planet Earth. It was a lot of the takeaways from his Netflix documentary. I just sense that like special energy in Caleb Williams.
It's fair. I mean, it that does matter, obviously. But I see Penix as a nice fallback option.
Yeah, Penix obvious bust, but that's fine. I mean,
well, it would say if he's a bust, he's not going to kill you because you probably can get him in day two. Although I guess the steam could get him into day one.
Why, to be honest, this is like how I am as a draft analyst. I'm not a serious draft analyst. I try to be informed. I will like watch cut-ups this month. I'm not even saying this is like a joke. Like, this is really what I do. Like, oh, and I'll watch the cut-ups of the player.
I mean, let's be honest. That's what most people do.
So, like, I don't ever pretend to be a draft expert. Was just a little troubled, though, by Michael Penix doing absolutely nothing in the national title game.
Oh.
If you're 25, like, you got to at least show out a little bit in the national title game, man. You don't have the excuse, like, I was 21, he didn't understand the defense.
He was playing, like, the best college defense in recent memory, and he was injured. He was injured for the entire game.
I forgot about that part.
Yeah, he could barely move. I think he had, you know, multiple broken ribs.
So, yeah, it's a good sign. The guy who's been hurt a lot was hurt.
You're such a hater. Oh, my God.
A real good sign, yeah. That's a positive.
All I'm saying is that Michael Penix needs to get to Miami one way or another.
Oh, man. That actually would be amazing.
It would be.
That would be amazing. Producer Adam points out, by the way, he was under siege that game. But...
Oh.
So what about his precious pressure to sack rate? I thought all he did was avoid sacks.
He did, and he did avoid sacks.
No, you're right. Yeah.
He played poorly, but he avoided sacks. He does. He was not. Him and Bo Nix are pressure to sack ratio key.
That's because they're 70 years old. They understand. Like they have like families and mortgages and two college degrees.
Whatever
they
the
better
reason,
understand the deep. They better understand how to avoid sacks.
Whatever the reason, it holds up.
So you couldn't play for 6 years. You'd be hurt by now if you didn't have a good like pressure to sack rate or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I see your point, but I guess I'm more bullish on Penix than most people.
And in lieu of screaming some more, I'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Cap off Premier League Fan Fest in Nashville, Tennessee this weekend by watching a thrilling matchup on Sunday as Mo Salah and Liverpool look to stay on atop the Premier League table as they take on Manchester United. Kickoff is set for 10:30 a.m. Eastern only on NBC and Peacock.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This said kickoff. I don't know. Is that what they call it in soccer? I forget. I'm actually a soccer fan too. I forget if they call it kickoff. So all the side, but all the British fathers were like, well, I thought I liked you until today.
Right. Producer Adam says first kick.
First kick. Oh, that's a dreadful term. It's an absolutely dreadful term. You need to fix that.
Right, you just defended every single overseas. Yeah,
yikes. So most of the nomenclature is pretty good. They do occasionally have some real clunker. So much British slang is good, and then you get a really bad one. First kick. Ugh. Yikes. I got to workshop that one a little more. But, man, the Premier League race, NBC and Peacock's going to have it. Liverpool, Arsenal, Man City are in a fight to the death. Mm-hmm. It's going to be amazing.
Oh, and, yeah. Don't I know it.
Yeah, Denny, as you know, London is in the mix.
You got to watch out for London.
You got to watch out for London in the Premier League on NBC and Peacock. You got to watch out for Ezekiel Elliott in Dallas, Texas. It's finally happening. They're talking about re-signing him. Jeremy Fowler reports they have mutual interest in reunion. We've been kind of forecasting this for a while because their backfield is just barren. It's Rico Dowdle right now. And the Rico Dowdle bros don't quite know what to do because they don't really truly believe it. But they are making the point, like, hey, man, there's no one else. Like, we kind of have to draft Rico Dotto right now. Denny, what we will presuppose is, what if you don't have to draft Rico Dotto right now? And is he, even if they don't sign Zeke, could he be hurt by the Cowboys potentially adding someone in the draft?
I don't really know what to say about Jerry Jones's infatuation with Ezekiel Elliott, but they're going to sign him. Let's just be honest about it. And I think he'll get first crack at being the lead back. You know, for better or worse, I think that's probably more likely than not. Looking at his numbers from last year in New England, 3.5 yards per rush attempt. That was a career low. 2.5 yards after contact per attempt. That was, you guessed it, a career low. He did catch a bunch of passes, which made him viable in fantasy. He had 51 catches on 65 targets. For 313 yards and 2 touchdowns last year. So that was cool. I mean, honestly, that was fun from a fantasy standpoint.
It was it? He took him away from Ramondre Stevenson.
Well, Ramondre was out forever.
Yeah, that's right. He was hurt a while. Now, what year are we talking about? 2023? When was that?
It was 7 years ago when he played for the Patriots. No, he was their best player last year, pretty much. I think that he, you know, whether you say Rico Dowdle's better or not, and he probably is, that won't matter. And I think Zeke could come back and just leave the backfield.
By the way, there were a fair number of Zeke rug pulls, by the way, in December. He had the one game where he had like 28 touches, I think like 9 catches, and he went like totally nuts in DFS. But I think he rug pulled like 2 or 3 weeks in a row after that.
Let me check here.
Maybe I'm incorrect on that, but
No, you did. He had 9 catches for 33 yards and a touchdown against Denver, 12 carries for 27 yards. And then after that, he had 1 catch the following week and then 5 catches the week after that with basically no rushing production. So, yeah, I mean, there were some rugs being pulled.
But to further your argument, it can be a much better offensive environment in Dallas. And if he just ends up with the rim finishing role, like if he's David Montgomery, he's Jamal Williams, Zeke, be prepared to learn to still draft Zeke, buddy, is all we can really say.
And you know what? Here's the thing. The kids, the Zoomers,
they won't do it.
They're not going to do it. They're going to say, no. I'm not taking the guy with a 2.5 yards after contact per carry average. No way. And I'm going to say, as an elderly millennial, I'm going to say, hell yes, exactly who I'm taking. He's going to be my RB1 in every format.
Do you really clock in as a millennial, by the way? Are you sure you weren't at the tail end of Gen X?
1983 qualifies as an elderly millennial.
I have heard that phrase before. I don't know if you still qualified, but
yeah, I just got in. Just got into
the You just got into the
I just got into the best generation, which is obviously the millennials.
I actually agree with that. fellow millennial Zach Moss, I think he's old enough. I do not think he's a consumer. With the Bengals, looked like a big winner of free agency where they're kind of moneyballing their backfield. But again, what we'll presuppose is, what if they don't? What if they draft someone? And Zach Moss just has all the makings of a guy where, like, the role looks so pristine in March and April. And he got some, like, a decent amount of money, but not like an awe-inspiring amount of money. And it could be the class like May 1st. You're like, what happened, man?
Yeah.
Two months of best ball teams.
My Zach Moss bags.
Yeah, exactly.
They're gone.
So you think there's a big threat that they draft a running back? Maybe not big. You think there's a threat they draft a running back?
Yeah, I mean, there's already Chase Brown, who was really good last year on limited usage. I think if they bring in another guy, you know, to maybe share early down stuff with Moss, I think, you know, that crushes him. Like, I already am hesitant to go in on Zach Moss because he reminds me so much of other guys I've been excited about in the offseason, whose role does not resemble anything, you know, come August doesn't resemble anything how it looked in March or April or May. So I'm just wary there. But honestly, like talking about Moss, the more I talk about him right now, the more I say Chase Brown is a problem.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking yourself into Zach Moss. That is a big thing. I feel like really getting overlooked with Zach Moss is the problem might already be on the roster.
Right.
There are some people not ignoring Chase Brown. So I'm not going to act like the whole industry is asleep on the Chase Brown.
Right. The problem is in the house.
It is. And
already.
But per Denny, the greatest quarterback running back connection in NFL history was Jake Browning and Chase Brown.
Oh, God. I mean, honestly, I'm the Vince McMahon meme when I think of that.
Say what they took from us, Denny. Look what they took from us. We used to have Chase Brown catching balls from Jake Browning. Now we have neither.
Now we have the UFL.
Yeah, Zach Moss, man. I don't know. I'm not drafting right now either, so it's not my problem. Like, I can wait to see if they draft someone. not my problem. Yeah. Quentin Johnston, we thought maybe this one was too obvious to even mention. But I mean, right now he might get a second chance under Jim Harbaugh. But if the Bolts go Malik Nabers, they go to Marvin Harrison at number five, is it just totally over for Quentin? Or maybe is it good? Is it free up easier looks for Quentin Johnston? I mean, Johnston, though, probably bad if they take a receiver at number five.
So I think that if you're drafting best ball teams before the NFL draft, you're taking Quentin Johnston with the idea that he would profile it possibly as a wide receiver one. If he, you know, has a wide receiver two role, if the Chargers go ahead and take Nabers or somebody else, another receiver, I should say, you're talking about such a huge gash in a potential air yards and target share numbers that he basically, I don't think, would be fantasy relevant. Because this offense will be either balanced or run heavy. So you're talking about fewer targets to go around. A guy like Nabers, honestly, in this offense could see a 30%+ target share. I really, you know, I believe that. So what does that leave for Quentin Johnston? It leaves nothing for him.
It is such a thin receiver core because it's Quentin Johnston, Josh Palmer, Simi Fuhoko, Darius Day. So
yeah.
You could argue being the number two wouldn't be a death knell, but like you said, when you're number two with that kind of passing volume, it's like, what do you even get? Because two, they've signed like a million tight ends. They signed Will Disley. They signed Hayden Hurst.
Right.
They'll probably sign a pass catching running back. So he needs to be the number one probably to have any shot at early season redraft relevance, to be draftable almost, I would say, in like 16 round, 12 team leagues. It almost has to be a no first round receiver for Quentin Johnston. I do agree with that.
I mean, and we're not even talking about the fact that he was wretched in every metric last year.
Yes. Except for 2 years ago, he blew up in the facing Jim Harbaugh in the national semifinals metric.
Which I'm not dismissing that. You know?
I'm sorry to keep harping on this.
No, it could matter. It could actually matter.
I swear this is how football coaches think, though.
Yeah.
The Vegas backfield, potential trouble spot, you think. Zamir White, Alexander Mattison. People are trying to figure out who's going to be a value here. Most people are guessing Zamir White, of course. But does it all go bye-bye?
They draft right. Him? Yeah. So Zamir White seems to be locked into a rock-solid role. Everybody laughed at the Mattison signing, which, by the way, if you saw Alexander Mattison at the Super Bowl like we did, you would not be laughing about
He is very, very big.
He is. The kids would call him yoked.
Yeah, he is
the largest. I saw Derrick Henry at the Super Bowl a couple years ago.
Henry was bigger. Henry is as big as you would imagine.
He's taller, but Madison is very large. So
Derrick Henry is one of the people where, you know, so you never know. Will someone be smaller in real life? Will they be bigger in real life? Will they be exactly as you imagine them? Derrick Henry was exactly as you would imagine.
I was like blown away.
Yeah,
by how big he was.
Awe-inspiring.
I He walked like, he looked like he was 7 feet tall somehow.
He really did. He looked like 6'10", 6'11".
And he's not. He's not. You know, was he 6'3",
6'4"? 6'4", 6'3", maybe.
Okay.
I think he's so listed at 6'4".
Like my brother-in-law is 6'4". He doesn't look like that.
No.
He doesn't tower above everybody.
Your brother-in-law does not look like Derrick Henry.
Anyway, yes. No, yes. Anyway, what were we saying? Oh, yeah. So the Raiders backfield. Right. So, Zamir White, some questionable metrics. He's, a big, strong guy, would seem to be the RB1. The problem is not in the house, okay? Like that, like with the Cincinnati backfield. But I could see a rookie, having a good camp, having a good preseason, and kind of sneaking his way into a role that hurts Zamir White, or maybe even overtakes him. Let's not pretend that Zamir White has suddenly become an unimpeachable RB1 in the NFL. It's not that.
Yeah. It's just such a classic offseason mistake. People might think, who would do that? And our counter argument would be, look back at every single offseason and the people who get steamed into like the shocking ADPs. Because it makes sense on paper, the role looks quite nice. This is going to have to be a run-based offense, unless they somehow come about their quarterback in the future. But if it's Aiden O'Connell or who's the veteran they even signed?
We
know.
Brian Hoyer?
No, they got rid of Brian Hoyer finally.
Oh, Minshew.
Minshew. Oh,
I forgot Minshew.
It's Minshew. Man, that's actually a problem. They're going to be pass heavy.
No. I thought so too, but the Colts were pretty stubbornly run heavy last year with Minshew.
That's Pro Bowler Gardner Minshew to us. But
yeah.
Yikes. But last thing I want to mention, Jaguars wide receivers. Christian Kirk sitting pretty right now after Calvin Ridley left. Won't be so pretty if they draft a receiver though, will he, Denny? Actually, he will be.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I can't imagine that the Jags are going to go into the season saying, Christian Kirk, our wide receiver one, Zay Jones, wide receiver two, and Gabe Davis, wide receiver three. Like, that, they can't go into the season like that, right? They're going to draft some
receiver. Well, I don't know. They're all – it could be the classic receiver room full of role players where it all works because they're all in the perfect role. That's what I would say about the Jaguars. On a separate basis, on a one-for-one basis, they're all role players. Christian Kirk is just a role player at the end of the day. But maybe if they're all in the absolute perfect role, it can work. I'll say that about their receiver corps.
Sure. I also am of the mind that Zay Jones is going to outproduce Gabe Davis. So their ADPs are ridiculous, respectively. Gabe Davis is a stupid ADP, and so is Zay Jones in the other direction.
You think people would have been over that by now,
right?
How many times can you get burned by Gabe Davis with the cyborg Josh Allen?
I only needed one to do that once.
Me too. It was 2022 was a scarring experience.
I had my wrist slap once in the Gabe Davis experience, and I said, "Well, I'm not reaching for that one anymore."
No, yeah, did not touch the Gabe Davis the stove there.
People were begging me online to reconsider. I mean, I had I have followers who have been following me for 10 years on the X platform, formerly known as Twitter. And they were saying, I mean, they were presenting like advanced stat arguments, like, please don't do this with Gabe Davis. Like, I care about you.
Tears in their eyes.
Like, I care about you as a person and as a fantasy analyst. You're ruining everything here by going in on Gabe Davis. And I said, no, it'll be fine. Gabe Davis is good. And he's not.
Yeah, the haters were wrong. There were a lot of first guessers on Gabe Davis. And that was one too where I tried to simplify. I like to try to simplify arguments. Like, I don't know. If a guy has 200 yards and four touchdowns in the divisional round, he's probably pretty good.
Turns out anybody can do it.
And I'll be forever haunted by his early 2022 ankle injury. I feel like it might have changed the trajectory of his career.
Remember on the first drive of the season, yes, he scored a touchdown?
Yes.
Oh my God. I was peacocking so hard. I mean, right. I was just honestly the worst person I know.
Remember it just like it was before the bank examiner lived in my guest bedroom.
He didn't catch a single pass after that. It was that touchdown was fun.
I am surprised the Jags signed him after he caught zero passes after week one, 2022. They should have probably not done that.
Yeah.
We should probably not keep talking. We're out of material for the show, but We thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back on Thursday with Kyle Dvorchik. We're going to talk about my coach rankings. It's not the only thing we'll talk about, though. We'll talk about the latest news. There'll probably be some draft chatter. Mm-hmm. There'll be some random odds and ends news, too. So we'll talk about that on Thursday. So for Denny Carter, I'm Patrick Daugherty. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back later this week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.